This is the NOCM ESOL International Proficient User Level C2 listening examination. Please check that your name and other details are on your mark sheet. The invigilator will have explained how to fill in the mark sheet. Do not write on your examination paper. Put your answers on the mark sheet. The listening examination will now begin. Part 1. You will hear 10 sentences. Read the replies on your examination paper. You have 2 minutes to read the replies on your examination paper. Listen to the sentences. You will hear the sentences in full twice. Choose the best reply for the situation. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers. 1. Have you seen the latest update from head office? 2. Which one did you say I should buy? 3. When was that book written? 4. When will it have been done by? 5. What did she say she would do? 6. It doesn't look like it'll rain tonight. 7. Didn't you say you think he's a good actor? 8. That works well, doesn't it? 9. I'll arrange for him to pick you up. 10. I don't think I'm going to make it to the party. Now listen to the sentences again. 1. Have you seen the latest update from head office? 2. Which one did you say I should buy? 3. When was that book written? 4. When will it have been done by? 5. What did she say she would do? 6. It doesn't look like it'll rain tonight. 7. Didn't you say you think he's a good actor? 8. That works well, doesn't it? 9. I'll arrange for him to pick you up. 10. I don't think I'm going to make it to the party. Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 2. Conversations. You will hear 2 conversations. Read the questions and answers on your examination paper for both conversations. You have 2 minutes to read them. Listen to conversation one. You'll hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions. You'll then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Hello. I'm in the UK travelling and I need to figure out how to travel around without spending too much. Could you give me some ideas?
Good morning. Booking train tickets at your earliest convenience will ensure that you secure the best price.
That's a good tip. I've also heard that travelling outside of peak times, when it's quieter, can help cut costs. Prices for hotels and attractions are usually lower when it's not peak tourist season.
That is very true. It's often cheaper to stay in budget hotels or hostels.
What about food? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, you can save a lot by buying food from local markets.
A tip I read online was to use discount cards for tourists.
Yes, that was good advice. Here in London, we have the Oyster Travel Card Scheme. Also, we have a leaflet I can provide you with that lists all the museums and galleries that have free entry.
Fabulous. That's a real bonus. It's a superb way to experience the local culture without spending anything. I have heard that tap water is drinkable here, and that's free too. Is that a real thing?
Yes, it is. Our water is treated to some of the strictest levels in the world and sourced from rivers, ground aquifers and reservoirs. So you can take comfort knowing it's totally safe to drink. Oh, and for getting around the cities, walking or using public transport, like buses, can be much cheaper than taxis. In fact, cities have new bike rental schemes that are quite affordable.
These are all great ideas. Thank you so much for your advice and help.
Now listen to the conversation again.
Hello. I'm in the UK travelling and I need to figure out how to travel around without spending too much. Could you give me some ideas?
Good morning. Booking train tickets at your earliest convenience will ensure that you secure the best price.
That's a good tip. I've also heard that travelling outside of peak times, when it's quieter, can help cut costs. Prices for hotels and attractions are usually lower when it's not peak tourist season.
That is very true. It's often cheaper to stay in budget hotels or hostels.
What about food? Do you have any suggestions?
Well, you can save a lot by buying food from local markets.
A tip I read online was to use discount cards for tourists.
Yes, that was good advice. Here in London, we have the Oyster Travel Card Scheme. Also, we have a leaflet I can provide you with that lists all the museums and galleries that have free entry.
Fabulous. That's a real bonus. It's a superb way to experience the local culture without spending anything. I have heard that tap water is drinkable here, and that's free too. Is that a real thing?
Yes, it is. Our water is treated to some of the strictest levels in the world and sourced from rivers, ground aquifers and reservoirs. So you can take comfort knowing it's totally safe to drink. Oh, and for getting around the cities, walking or using public transport like buses can be much cheaper than taxis. In fact, cities have new bike rental schemes that are quite affordable.
These are all great ideas. Thank you so much for your advice and help.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 2. Conversations. Listen to conversation 2. You will hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Hi, Chris. Have you seen the latest film by Christopher Nolan?
Hi, Paula. Yes, I've seen it. The way they used IMAX cameras to capture those expansive scenes is incredible. The attention to detail in every frame is just astonishing.
Absolutely. I especially loved the use of natural lighting. It added such a realistic and immersive feel to the scenes.
Speaking of lighting, did you notice how it changed subtly to reflect the characters' emotions? It's such a powerful technique to convey mood without words.
Definitely. And the use of shadows and silhouettes. So many scenes had this dramatic play of light and dark that added to the tension and atmosphere.
That reminds me of another film I saw last week, The Batman. The cinematography in that film was incredible, especially considering the way they use rain to create a moody ambience. It was particularly effective in setting a somber, intense mood for some of the scenes.
Oh, I love that film. I know just what you mean about the rain, but not only that, the way they used lighting and shadows to create a brooding atmosphere really enhanced the film too. They also made use of the warmer spectrum of light.
The use of shadows in The Batman perfectly matched the dark, mysterious nature of the character. It's amazing how these elements can evoke such strong emotions.
It fascinates me how cinematography can transform a story. It's not just about capturing the action, but enhancing the portrayal through visual artistry.
That's what makes studying film so exciting.
Now listen to the conversation again.
Hi, Chris. Have you seen the latest film by Christopher Nolan?
Hi, Paula. Yes, I've seen it. The way they used IMAX cameras to capture those expansive scenes is incredible. The attention to detail in every frame is just astonishing.
Absolutely. I especially loved the use of natural lighting. It added such a realistic and immersive feel to the scenes.
Speaking of lighting, did you notice how it changed subtly to reflect the characters' emotions? It's such a powerful technique to convey mood without words.
Definitely. And the use of shadows and silhouettes. So many scenes had this dramatic play of light and dark that added to the tension and atmosphere.
That reminds me of another film I saw last week, The Batman. The cinematography in that film was incredible, especially considering the way they use rain to create a moody ambience. It was particularly effective in setting a somber, intense mood for some of the scenes.
Oh, I love that film. I know just what you mean about the rain, but not only that, the way they used lighting and shadows to create a brooding atmosphere really enhanced the film too. They also made use of the warmer spectrum of light.
The use of shadows in The Batman perfectly matched the dark, mysterious nature of the character. It's amazing how these elements can evoke such strong emotions.
It fascinates me how cinematography can transform a story. It's not just about capturing the action, but enhancing the portrayal through visual artistry.
That's what makes studying film so exciting.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Part 3. Debate and discussion. You will now hear a debate and a discussion. You will hear them twice. You have 2 minutes to look at the questions for both the debate and the discussion. Now listen to the debate. You will hear it twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Today, we're debating whether foreign countries should provide all official services in English. I'm joined by my guest, Susan Smith, a language policy expert.
I think it's a great idea. English is a global language, and making services available in English would attract more tourists and international business.
I understand your point, but I disagree. Imposing English on all official services could undermine local languages and cultures.
But consider the benefits. For countries whose languages are very obscure, providing services in English can be a game changer. Tourists would find it easier to navigate, and businesses would flourish. Countries like Japan and Thailand already do this to some extent, and it helps them stay competitive globally.
True, some businesses might do this voluntarily to attract tourists, but making it a mandatory policy isn't necessary. Market demand will naturally encourage restaurants and shops to provide English menus and signs where needed. Plus, countries with official bilingual policies, like Singapore, already show how bilingualism can work without imposing on cultural identity.
But those bilingual policies prove the point. Not adopting English officially could mean falling behind.
I'm still worried that English could overshadow the native language, leading to its decline over time. Languages are deeply tied to cultural identity, and losing a language means losing a part of our heritage.
That's a valid concern. Maybe there's a middle ground, providing essential services in English while preserving and promoting the native language could be a solution.
I can agree with that. Promoting English for accessibility while ensuring the native language remains vibrant seems like a reasonable compromise.
Now listen to the debate again.
Today, we're debating whether foreign countries should provide all official services in English. I'm joined by my guest, Susan Smith, a language policy expert.
I think it's a great idea. English is a global language, and making services available in English would attract more tourists and international business.
I understand your point, but I disagree. Imposing English on all official services could undermine local languages and cultures.
But consider the benefits. For countries whose languages are very obscure, providing services in English can be a game changer. Tourists would find it easier to navigate, and businesses would flourish. Countries like Japan and Thailand already do this to some extent, and it helps them stay competitive globally.
True. Some businesses might do this voluntarily to attract tourists, but making it a mandatory policy isn't necessary. Market demand will naturally encourage restaurants and shops to provide English menus and signs where needed. Plus, countries with official bilingual policies, like Singapore, already show how bilingualism can work without imposing on cultural identity.
But those bilingual policies prove the point. Not adopting English officially could mean falling behind.
I'm still worried that English could overshadow the native language, leading to its decline over time. Languages are deeply tied to cultural identity, and losing a language means losing a part of our heritage.
That's a valid concern. Maybe there's a middle ground, providing essential services in English while preserving and promoting the native language could be a solution.
I can agree with that. Promoting English for accessibility while ensuring the native language remains vibrant seems like a reasonable compromise.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 3. Debate and discussion. Listen to the discussion. You will hear it twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Welcome to today's episode of Homes and Gardens. I'm Jordan Taylor, and my guest today is property agent Lara Golding. On this programme, we're discussing the benefits of a new home compared to an older home. What do you think? Should we start with new homes?
First, new homes often incorporate the latest insulation technologies as standard, resulting in superior energy efficiency. Plus, new homes are typically equipped with state-of-the-art fixtures and fittings, which can be a big draw.
That's true. And they're designed with modern living in mind. Open-plan living spaces, more electrical outlets, and integrated smart home systems are quite common nowadays. However, new homes can sometimes lack the intrinsic character and architectural charm of older properties.
I agree. Older homes do have a unique historical charm that new homes often lack. But don't you think there's a risk with old homes having hidden problems like outdated wiring or antiquated plumbing systems? Older homes might require more maintenance and could come with unforeseen repair costs.
I disagree with you there. When it comes to construction quality, some new homes are built by cowboy builders who cut corners to save costs. This can even lead to structural deficiencies down the line. I used to think new homes were the better choice, but I'm beginning to see the allure of older homes.
Another point to consider is space. Older homes frequently boast larger rooms and higher ceilings, whereas new homes can sometimes feel cramped, like living in a shoebox.
Well, in the end, I suppose it boils down to what you prioritise. The efficiency and modernity of a new home, or the character and reliability of an old one.
Now listen to the discussion again.
Welcome to today's episode of Homes and Gardens. I'm Jordan Taylor, and my guest today is property agent Lara Golding. On this programme, we're discussing the benefits of a new home compared to an older home. What do you think? Should we start with new homes?
First, new homes often incorporate the latest insulation technologies as standard, resulting in superior energy efficiency. Plus, new homes are typically equipped with state-of-the-art fixtures and fittings, which can be a big draw.
That's true. And they're designed with modern living in mind. Open-plan living spaces, more electrical outlets, and integrated smart home systems are quite common nowadays. However, new homes can sometimes lack the intrinsic character and architectural charm of older properties.
I agree. Older homes do have a unique historical charm that new homes often lack. But don't you think there's a risk with old homes having hidden problems like outdated wiring or antiquated plumbing systems? Older homes might require more maintenance and could come with unforeseen repair costs.
I disagree with you there. When it comes to construction quality, some new homes are built by cowboy builders who cut corners to save costs. This can even lead to structural deficiencies down the line. I used to think new homes were the better choice, but I'm beginning to see the allure of older homes.
Another point to consider is space. Older homes frequently boast larger rooms and higher ceilings, whereas new homes can sometimes feel cramped, like living in a shoebox.
Well, in the end, I suppose it boils down to what you prioritise. The efficiency and modernity of a new home, or the character and reliability of an old one.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening examination. Please check your mark sheet is completed correctly. Put your pens down. End of examination.